how mother's antibodies can protect newborns from serious infections. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to explain the research and its implications is Chair of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cincinnati Children's, Dr. Sing Sing Wei. Welcome to the program, Dr. Wei.
Well, thank you so much, Lucy, for having me and giving me this opportunity to highlight what I think is an under-recognized problem, that newborn babies are so highly vulnerable in many different ways, and particularly to infection.
Well, I really appreciate that you're saying that, because I had two babies myself a long time ago, and I know there are a million things that parents, expecting parents, worry about. And your study looked at why some newborn babies get sick, very sick sometimes, from bacterial infections. How common are these infections?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So I think one of the interesting features about why babies get infection is that there's many differences in how immune cells work in newborn babies compared with older children or adults. But so far, we haven't really been able to pinpoint the exact difference that makes babies especially vulnerable to infection. And I think that's what this study helped to elucidate. What we found is that most babies that get infection are not by superbugs or pandemic respiratory viruses, but they're often caused by the microbes that are harmless and normally live in all of our skin or our intestine. But for some reason, babies just can't fight it very effectively. And those one of those microbes is called E. coli, which is a really common bacteria that helps in our digestion and lives in almost every one of our intestines.
Mm-hmm. And so how many babies on average get these infections from E. coli that become a problem? Is it like 1 in 10, 1 in 100? How common is this?
Yeah. So in America, there's probably 3.5, 3.6 babies that are born every single year.
Out of how many? 3.5?
So there's 3.5, 3.6 million babies.
Okay, gotcha.
And then about 1 in 1,000 of them get E. coli infection, which makes it one of the leading causes of infection in the newborn period. And what that means is we have about 3,500, 3,600 babies getting infected every year. Or think about it another way is every single day in America, we have about 10 babies developing life-threatening infection from what seems like a really harmless bacteria.
So these infections can be very serious. You said life-threatening?
For sure. And what we know about the way babies respond is that they don't have a lot of reserve. And so when they get sick, they can become sick really fast. And their bodies don't have a lot of space. So when infection does take hold, it can also spread really fast. And that's what makes infections in newborn babies really serious. And that's why pediatricians are super vigilant to try and look for any suspicious signs or symptoms of infection and to try and take action as soon as possible.
How are these infections treated in the babies that develop them?
Yeah. Once they're identified, thankfully here in America, we have very potent antibiotics. We have neonatal intensive care units with all sorts of support systems that can help a baby breathe, help a baby's cardiovascular system, support a baby's cardiovascular system if needed. I think what's unfortunate is that babies in America are super lucky in that regard. And most babies that develop infection in settings where there's not neonatal intensive care units or the opportunity to support, then those outcomes are often often much worse and often fatal.
Mm. So your study looked at why some babies get infections while most babies don't. You said 3,500, 3,600 babies per year, which is a lot, but out of the 3.5, 3.6 million babies born each year, it's a small fraction. What did you find? Why do some of these babies get these very serious infections and most others don't?
Yeah, I think one of the remarkable things that we identified is looking at the susceptibility of newborn babies instead of from a glass half empty perspective, like they're extremely vulnerable, but instead from a glass half full perspective, or in this case, 99.9% full, because only 1 out of 1,000 babies get infected. And a lot of times how researchers, including ourselves, had tried to identify the vulnerability in newborn babies is to compare them to older children or adults. But what we found is that's probably not the right way. And instead, we found a way to compare only the 1 in 1,000 compared with the 999 and try to figure out what is it special about that 1 in 1,000 that made it get an infection. And normally that type of study would be extremely hard to do because if you're looking for 1 in 1,000, it's a little bit like looking for a needle in a haystack. And so you need a big enough haystack so you can find enough needles to really find enough cases of infection by any one particular bug to make meaningful conclusions. And here's, I think, a workaround that we were able to exploit is to sample the specimens from newborn blood spots that are collected in every single baby when they're first born to screen for various metabolic or genetic disorders. But in some circumstances, those blood spots are saved and cataloged. And so when we wanted to identify many, many cases of E. coli infection or samples from babies with that infection, we're able to mine databases for kids who had that infection and then retrieve their newborn blood spot and then be able to miniaturize many types of laboratory assays where we can then look at what's different in the newborn blood spots of those babies that developed infection compared with the 999 babies that didn't develop infection.
Wow. It's like you're trying to solve this medical mystery through these techniques. We're talking about new research about the protection that a mother's antibodies offer newborns. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So I've been talking about, or I've referenced antibodies a few times during this conversation. Did you find that those babies who become infected, did they somehow get less of these protective antibodies in the womb than the babies that didn't become infected?
Yeah, that's exactly what we found. So the babies who got infected had on average only about 10% or less of the levels of antibodies that are targeting E. coli compared with the babies who didn't get infected, which is quite a big difference. And to us, what that means is that the 999 babies who normally don't get infection, that's nature's way of protecting babies, that mothers have those antibodies and then they're naturally transferred to babies to protect them, despite their vulnerability, despite their immune cells not working properly. But in the rare case where there's either not enough transfer of maternal antibodies to babies, or those antibodies aren't working well, then we have a situation where then the babies unfortunately do get infection.
Were you able to determine why some babies get such a smaller amount of these antibodies compared to the majority of babies?
That's a really important question, and that's exactly what we're working on now.
Okay.
I think that research or part of that question sort of lends itself to some obvious next steps based on this research, which is to help identify those babies that are especially vulnerable, that 1 in 1,000 babies. So then maybe we can monitor them more closely. One of the ways we can do that is screening mothers during pregnancy for the presence of these anti-E. coli antibodies. Right now in America, when women are pregnant, they have screening for various types of responses or exposures to potential infections where we know the babies are at extremely high risk for. And I think that based on this, we can also add E. coli to that list, because if we found mothers that naturally didn't have very high antibody levels to this potential pathogen for babies, then we could monitor those babies more carefully, or maybe even prophylactically treat those babies to prevent infection.
What prompted you to study how newborns get infected with E. coli?
Yeah, so I'm an infectious disease pediatrician. I take care of sick babies and children, and I've been doing this for over 20 years. And I would say most of the time when I talk with parents about their children, they want to know what made their child sick and what can we as doctors do to prevent their child from becoming sick again. And I feel that despite years of training, medical school and residency and fellowship, what I learned is how to disguise an I don't know answer in complex medical jargon.
Oh, wow.
And so because of that realization, I've spent more and more time, instead of taking care of patients at the bedside, but spending more time in the laboratory trying to figure out the answers to those I don't know questions where I myself as a parent would have if I have a sick child.
Yeah. Well, because you're an MD and a PhD, right? So you've got the treating of the patients and also all the research that you're doing as part of your work.
Yes, I did train in a combined program where I trained in both research and in clinical medicine. But I wouldn't say that's a prerequisite. I think it's more the curiosity and the motivation to look at how we currently take care of sick babies and children, instead of from a glass half full perspective, but maybe from a glass half empty perspective. So not being satisfied with our current standard of care and then trying to push the envelope to ask if we can do better as doctors. And then if we need to do better, then we need to have new knowledge. And I think it's important that people who take care of sick patients participate in generating the new knowledge.
That makes sense. So you talked about some of what's coming next with this research, what the questions that are still there to be answered, and maybe this is one of them. Is there any way yet to test whether a baby is at greater risk of developing an infection, or is that one of those questions you're trying to figure out by figuring out which babies could be most vulnerable to this?
Yeah. So it turns out that that's really pathogen specific. And so right now we're screening babies for susceptibility to other common infections like tetanus, or another common pathogen that babies get in trouble with is called group B streptococcus. And the way we identify babies potentially at risk for that is by screening their mothers during pregnancy. And so E. coli turns out to be one of the leading causes of infection in that context, where we currently have no vaccine or screening modality. And so my hope is that then we can not make that such a common pathogen.
Oh, so there's no way to screen pregnant women for those E. coli pathogens now?
That's right, because, and that's one of the real interesting features of this research, is that the mothers who develop who have the E. coli antibodies, none of them had prior E. coli infection, or were ever vaccinated against E. coli because we don't have such a vaccine. But in fact, they developed those antibodies just from the E. coli bacteria that normally lives inside their intestine. And it's normally harmless, but it's enough to make their bodies respond. And that response then confers protection to newborn babies.
You mentioned that there's no effective vaccine for E. coli. Can you tell us more about that? Are there any studies looking for a vaccine?
Sure. People have tried to look for vaccines against E. coli now for decades, and most of them fail. One of the really interesting features of that came out of this study is when we tested for anti-E. coli antibodies, we also tried to figure out what particular feature of E. coli those antibodies were recognizing. And we found really conserved features in E. coli that seemed to be cross-reactive against all the pathogenic strains of E. coli that cause infection in newborn babies. And so another avenue for this research is to develop those antigens or test if those antigens could be candidate vaccines, or if we can target those features in E. coli with directed antibodies, can we protect against E. coli?
Hmm. Is there anything that mothers can do or should do during pregnancy to try to make sure their babies get the antibodies they need? I mean, I feel like anybody who's, you know, pregnant wants to do everything they can to make sure their baby is healthy and strong and happy when they're born.
For sure. And I think in many ways, our study is actually a positive result, meaning that nature is doing it right 99.9% of the time. And so mothers, from that perspective, are doing a great job just by being mothers. I would say one additional feature that we found is that those protective antibodies can also be transmitted through breastfeeding. And so to the extent that it's possible, breastfeeding would also transmit even more of those antibodies from the mother to the baby.
Can breastfeeding be helpful after a baby is, for those babies who are already infected?
Probably not. Okay. So I think these antibodies, the way we've tested them, is the presence of these antibodies before the infection is initiated. I think breastfeeding certainly couldn't hurt, but I think if a baby's infected, then what they really need is care in a hospital by pediatricians or doctors that are knowledgeable to take care of not just sick children, but sick babies.
Mm. What other kinds of protection can maternal antibodies provide for newborn babies? Can vaccinated mothers, for example, pass those protections along to their babies who are too young to get vaccines?
For sure, for sure. So because newborn babies are so vulnerable to infection, scientists have for a long time tried to figure out what's the best way to boost their immune system, boost their immunity against infection. And I think this research further suggests that one of the most effective ways to do that is to improve the health of women during pregnancy and improve the health of reproductive age women. So if you have healthy women and healthy pregnancies, then you're naturally going to have healthier babies. And one of the ways to make pregnancies healthier is to vaccinate women or protect them as much as possible against infection, because what we know is that the immunity that we can prime in a woman during pregnancy is naturally transferred to the baby. And so that is one of the most efficient and cost-effective ways to protect babies, is to make mothers healthier.
I know there are moms out there who might have concerns about getting vaccines during pregnancy, you know, the COVID vaccine, the flu shot, MMRI, things like that. How do doctors advise pregnant patients who have concerns about that?
Yeah. And I think anytime when you deal with something new, it's not unreasonable to have concerns, because you never want to try something new against a vulnerable state, like being pregnant or in a newborn baby. But I think in this case of vaccination, there's overwhelming data for the improvement in terms of health. And there's always an exception in terms of a side effect, an allergy, or some harmful effect of the vaccine. But I think if you look at things in a global population in a database way, the overwhelming majority of the data would suggest that vaccines are clearly working in women during pregnancy. They're clearly protecting women against infection during pregnancy. And they also then protect their babies against infection during pregnancy.
I know you said there are lots more questions to answer based on this research, and we've got just a few seconds left. Any other particular infectious pathogens that you want to study next?
Sure. So a bacteria that's really related to E. coli is a bacteria called Klebsiella. We don't see that a lot here in America, but it turns out that's a close cousin to E. coli that causes a lot of infections in newborn babies in resource-limited countries. And we'd love to apply some of this work we're doing with E. coli to related bacteria like that.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Dr. Sing Sing Wei, Chair of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cincinnati Children's. Thank you so much for being here today to talk about this important work.
Thank you, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.